I got a couple of questions, and hopefully you haven't heard all these before.
Yeah, I probably have, but whatever. Yeah.
Well, hopefully they're less frequent than the rest. All right,
let's see. All
right. So first I want to say congratulations on the Long Island Music Hall of Fame.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, I saw the award ceremony. It was pretty sweet, man.
Yeah, we had a pretty fun time there. It was pretty cool and it was kind of overwhelming, you know, like Long Island. All the bands that have been inducted in there, most of them were all like big platinum artists and shit. So for us, it was pretty big.
And now it's like right on the tail of that, you're finished recording a new record and it's getting ready to be released next month, The Pinnacle of Bedlam. How long did it take to record?
Well, we started writing it at the end of 2011 and started arranging it and writing it really fully in 2012, and then went into the studio in August 2012 and recorded for a month and a half at Full Force Studios with Joe Sincotta, and that's right by us on Long Island. And then we decided to have Zeus master it, and we sent it out to him. And I guess we got it back from Zeus about a month or so later after that. So it was probably all completed and finished by, like, let's see, August, September, October, like end of October maybe. It was probably all completed, and then we just had to worry about the artwork and everything.
I guess the big difference, besides having Zeus do the mixing and mastering, was the switching from Mike back to Dave. Was there a big difference? Was it easier recording with Dave versus Mike?
I gotta say, Mike is a sick drummer, and, you know, when we got Dave back in the band, I mean, it was easier recording with Dave, and we all get along great with Dave. He lives local to us, and he's lived here for like 3 years, so we've been in contact with him for long before he was even back in the band, just always hanging out and talking and stuff, so, so when he came back in and came into the studio, he nailed it. He was good. He was great to work with and everything. So I was supposed to practice with him tonight, but I'm actually not. But we're going. I think we're practicing Monday, whatever. But yeah, we practiced over at Dave's house, and he's a great guy.
Yeah, because when I heard that he rejoined, I was like, oh, it's kind of like a mini Pyrexia reunion, and it's also a Despise the Sun like lineup, kind of.
Yeah.
This year marks like the 25th anniversary of like Suffocation. Are there any special 25th anniversary plans yet?
None that I know of, and you know, I've heard a few interviewers that we've done talk about 25 years and all that, and actually I haven't even sat down and thought about it yet. I didn't even realize it was 25 years. It's crazy. But, I mean, you know, like when Suffo first formed, I was there, but then I left before they recorded anything. So I wasn't really there from the beginning with Suffo. But since 2003, I've been there. So it's pretty cool, you know. I mean, because, you know, I left Suffo right after they formed, pretty much. We just started to write Catatonia, and then I left. And then I did Pyrexia, did an album and stuff with them, EP and stuff. And then took a couple of years off and then did Internal Bleeding. And then I actually, towards around the year 2000, I was jamming with Mike Smith on some of his solo stuff. And talking with him, and he was like, you know what, Frank might be moving back if you want to possibly try out for Suffo, because I don't think Doug's going to do it. So I told him, yeah, and then I hadn't heard from Mike in a while, and then he called me up, and he's like, yeah, Frank's back. Are you still willing to do that? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. And then Terrence got on the phone, and he's like, come on, bro, just do it. You can do it. Anybody can do it. Come on. So I was like, all right, fuck it. So I went and tried it and did it, and here I am.
Yeah, because I remember you. Like, I remember first seeing you with, like, Internal Bleeding, like, backdooring, like, Castle Heights and everything.
Yeah. I was also doing Pyrexia with Castle Heights, too, before Eternal Bleeding. It's crazy. Yeah. Castle Heights should still be there, but that place is a pretty cool little tight spot.
Yeah, I think almost everybody's played there, and it's like, I still think it's funny. I still, like, every time Mastodon comes around, I was like, I remember seeing Mastodon play at Castle Heights, and now like they're doing the Garden.
Yeah, Castle Heights and in the city over on 8th Street or St. Mark's or whatever with Coney Island High.
That was such a great spot.
Yeah.
But the new record, we have another re-recording from the Breeding the Spawn masterpiece, Beginning of Sorrow. And it seems like, I believe you're like 4 songs in and re-recording that whole album?
Right.
Yeah, is there any...
Actually, let me see, there's one on Pierce, then there's one on, isn't there one on Souls?
I wasn't sure, I think maybe one of the foreign imports.
Right, I can't remember if we did one on Pierce.
I know you got...
On Souls. Well, we did Prelude, we did, they did Breeding the Spawn on Pierce. We did
Anomalistic Marital Offering. Decimation.
Anomalistic Offerings is another one we did, I swear there was another one, but maybe it wasn't released. I don't know. Yeah. Can't think of it.
When all of those songs...
Oh, yeah, there was another one. We actually, during Solstice and I, we recorded Anomalistic Offerings, Breeding the Spawn, we recorded a third time. Which actually didn't get released anywhere, but we just did it for fun. And then I think we recorded Prelude then also. We recorded those three. And then when the self-title came out, we re-recorded Prelude. Yeah, that's what it was.
So the goal is to re-release the record once all the songs are re-recorded over the next couple of albums?
No, I don't think there's any plan to re-release the album or anything with the recorded material. I mean... At least there's nothing right now that we're talking about or thinking about or anything.
How's the Legacy of Violence DVD going?
Legacy of Violence DVD. We were working with a close friend in California on that for years, and some shit happened between us. And you know, we're still friends with the guy and everything, but it just kind of fell through. He did a lot of work on it and put a lot of stuff together on it, but then it just kind of fell through with him and us. So basically, he gave us all the stuff that he's done, and all the footage. We have tons and tons of it, and we have a new guy. This guy Tommy from New Jersey. He has a company called The Studio, and he's going to be working on Legacy of Violence. Probably he'll be working on it this year. He filmed our Making of Pinnacle of Bedlam DVD in the studio, which comes with the new CD. And then he filmed our video at Dolphus in Brooklyn for As Grace Descends. And so he's basically our video guy now, and he's going to be working on Legacy of Violence.
Cool, look forward to it, because I keep getting tired of looking at the same old clips that you have up online already.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch that were never put up that we reviewed that were really sick. But, like I said, it's kind of getting redone now, so. And the other guy we were working with in California, he did interviews with pretty much everybody in the band, old members and new members. And I think we're going to probably use some of that, but we're probably going to redo some of it also and have new interviews and stuff. And whole sections on the DVD talking about equipment and personal lives and, you know, history and all kinds of stuff. So it's going to be a lot of stuff. It's not just the, you know, live shows and stuff, but there will be live footage on there also from different eras.
I was going to ask you about your personal life. I know, like, outside of Suffocation, you do a lot of photography and you do, like, some camera work.
I got into photography, like, years ago and, you know, bought an SLR, digital SLR, and upgraded since then, and just been getting equipment and doing stuff, and I've always been into video and stuff, and hooked up with James Balsamo, and he's done a couple independent movies. What did he do? He did Hack Job. What's the other one he did?
Oh, man.
Spill Your Guts? Spill on Your Grave?
Yeah, I Spill Your Guts. Yes, I Spill Your Guts.
I always get them mixed up. But I think of Frank Mullins in that one, and that's how I hooked up with James. He asked me to film the last one he just did, which was Cool as Hell, which should be out very soon. And I'm kind of dying to see how it looks, because he's doing all the editing and everything on it. I just did the filming. And I didn't do all the filming. His brother also filmed, and I believe he filmed on some parts too. But it was cool. It was like a little foot in the door for me, because I've never done it before. But it was fun, and I really liked doing it. I mean, besides that stuff, I fish like a maniac also. I love fishing.
Yeah. James done I've known James for a few years. I interviewed him. I was a cameraman interviewing him for my friend's website. And I also, we worked on a movie together too, another one. So that's how I know him. He's been bugging me about Cool as Hell. And every time he's trying to do something, I was like, I'm busy. I can't do it already. I'm not around whenever he called me around. So I was like, it was a big, like, scheduling conflict.
Yeah, what? You film also?
Yeah. I started like about a year or two ago. And like he ended up being like an actor in one of the movies I was shooting. And my friend Jen Aardvark, she like I think she interviewed you guys like a couple years ago. You know.
Wait a minute. I think I saw something about your movie.
Jacko
Frank Mullins got a small part in there too.
No, I don't think he's in ours. Ours was at that maybe the new one, but at the time we did one called Jacko Slasher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, James was.
Yeah, there was another one I just seen something about written up about where James had a small part in it, and so did Frank.
Yeah, no, James was a character in our movie. He got disemboweled.
Yeah.
It was pretty. It was wild time. So yeah, since then I've been like here's our Canon or Sony. And now it's like, here's a Canon 7D. Have fun. So, I'm all about like filming stuff.
Yeah, that's what I got. I have a Canon 7D, and I got like a ton of lenses and video monitors and different shit. Yeah. So, and like I got a Steadicam and shit. Actually, it's a Glide Cam, but I love doing it, man. I'm anxious to film something else, and he's about to start something else, and I think I'm going to help him on it. So
let's talk about some of your gear. You're still using your signature ASM nowadays, right?
Yep. Yeah, I have BC Rich made the signature ASM for me, and it's basically just a regular ASM shape. It's not really modified in the shape too much, except for a reverse headstock. And I got my own. It's a rosewood fretboard with my own inlays. They're like little UFO inlays and like abalone inlays. And then I have the Kayla Tremolo on there, which I'm endorsed with, and Seymour Duncan pickup, which I'm endorsed with. And then I have Spurzel locking tuners on the back, even though I have a locking nut. I have Spurzel locking tuners on the back. It just makes it quicker for changing strings. And, I use that, or I use my my handmade versions of them, which are pretty much exactly the same. Just, they play a little bit better because they're just, they're more made the way I wanted them. And when they decided to make the imports, they said, you know, we can make it the import signature, but it has to be, just the standard at ASM, which is good. The standard ASM one that BC Rich makes for me as a signature is, I think, 25 and a quarter scale, or 25 and a half, whatever it is, something like that. And then my handmade ones are 24 and three quarters, so the scale is a little bit shorter on them. But you kind of get used to it. I mean, I jump back and forth on them anyway, so it doesn't matter. But other than that, they're pretty much the same.
Does one get used in a studio more than the other one? Or, like, which one's better for studio? Or is there one better for studio versus live?
I jump between my silver handmade and my black handmade. And once in a while, I use the signature. But sometimes I fly with the signature, and I'll use the signature on like a whole European tour or different places, because I just don't want to bring the handmaids because they just get damaged, you know. But they all play the same. They all sound the same, so there's no difference in the sound, especially for like death metal. You know, we're just going for that high gain, heavy sound, so you're not going to hear that much tonal difference. But yeah, I mean, I use them all, but like in the studio, I used for the last album, I used just my silver one, my silver handmade, and Terrence used he also has a signature model. He used his signature import in the studio for the whole album. He didn't even he just wanted to back that guitar fully and show that it could be used, which it can, and so can mine. But I was more comfortable in the studio playing on my silver one. It's just kind of like a part of me, like it's my favorite guitar, so it's the one I wanted to use.
When you guys are together, do you guys write collectively or do you guys write separately then get together?
We write collectively, but for the most part we write separately. Like we all write at home, you know, using Pro Tools LE and like Easy Drummer, just to get the basic gist of how we want the song to sound. And then we go back and forth to each other's houses, and we're mostly at Terrence's house, and structuring the songs and feeding off each other to write new riffs to add into the song. But for the most part, we all start our stuff right at home and either write complete songs at home or start them and then get together and finish them. Except, everything is true in that statement, except for this last album. We did the song on the album called Rapture of Revocation. We pretty much put that song together in the studio. What we did is we tracked all the drums in the studio and for all the songs. And then when all the drums were done, Dave went home for a little while to just reflect on what he's done. And his drums were still set up, so he could always come back and change parts if he wanted to. So while Terrence was tracking guitars in between, Terrence took a break from tracking his tracks, and I said to Derek, I was like, come on, let's start another song. So we brought up a click track, and I had some old riffs, and that's how the song starts, with a bunch of my old riffs, and then it goes into one of Derek's parts, and then it goes back to some of my riffs, and then the next day, Terrence came into the studio, and I was like, yo, Terrence, we started another song. We need another song for this album, so we started one. And he's like, oh, man, all right, fuck it. And then he listened to it, and he's like, I was like, I know you got some riffs. So he finished off the last half of the song with his riffs, and then we had Dave come in. We told Dave, yeah, listen, we did this, and do a click track. We just come in and figure out what you want to do for drums. And we actually bounced down those tracks to him first and sent them out to him so he could hear the song. And then he came in and did his drum tracks. And then Frank wrote lyrics and came in and did the vocal. So that song was pretty much all done in the studio.
That's a really good song. I like the end of that song. It's also, it's just a great ending track for the album overall. It just got that straight up sludgy kind of it's perfect headbanging music.
we kind of planned it that way. It sounds like the album's coming to an end, so it's like it kind of completes Pinnacle of Bedlam at the end, and then surprise, there's the Bringing the Spawn re-recorded track right after it. You know, it's like a little extra bonus on there, so it's kind of cool the way it worked out.
Yeah, and I believe is Mike did that one, correct? Mike did the
Mike played the drums on the Bringing the Spawn re-record. So yeah,
is that like going to be a future thing where he's just going to do the re-recordings, or will Dave take it over?
I have no idea. I have no clue really what we're going to do with that. If Mike's going to do another one or not, I guess we'll see what happens. You know, when we get to that point, probably the next album. The way we've been doing it is like 2 or 3 years, and this one was the longest gap. But who knows? I mean, mean, the next album may come even sooner. I know that we've already started writing stuff, so I think between me, Terrence, and Derek, we're planning on probably writing as much as we can this year in between tours and stuff. And we would, I mean, it would be great to go into the studio and have another album for next year, you know. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, we always want to do that, but then it turns out, oh, we got that tour, this tour, and then we can't concentrate on writing so much. So, but we're feeling good right now. We are writing already for the next album.
You've been in, like, in the music for a while, off and on, for, you know, a good, like, 25 years, basically. Like, what are, like, for when you talk to, like, younger kids, what do you, like, tell them to, like, be careful of this or watch out for this? Like, what do you, what's advice do you give to, like, the newer kids or more even established acts that don't know anything about, you know, things to look out for?
I guess I would say just find people that are dedicated and into doing what you're into doing and just go for it. There's really nothing to look out for. It just take your time, write good music and make the riffs catchy and not just nonstop speed with like a million riffs that you, by the time you're done with the first song, you can't even remember the first riff in the first song, you know? It's like, you kind of want something that's a little memorable and, I mean, that's how we write. It's got to be like kind of catchy in some way and memorable other than that, I mean, like, there's nothing really to watch out for. Just if you're trying to get on a record deal or something like that, I would say definitely get a lawyer and have them, a lawyer that knows the music and have them look over the contract and make sure you're not going to get ripped off and all that shit. But other than that, it's just basic common sense.
Are there certain songs that Suffocation will not play live?
No, there's not really any songs that we will not play live. It's just a matter of when we get to them. It's like, there's so many songs in the Suffocation catalog that like, and now we have another whole set of new songs with this album. And we really want to play all these songs that are on this album. So I think we're going to come out with this album when we start playing and touring, playing at least four or five of these songs. So that's going to cut down on what we're playing for the old stuff. And it happens like that every album cycle. And then another thing that happens is, you know, we spend the time to pretty much relearn old songs to be able to play them live. And then if we don't always play them live, it's like we got to constantly keep going back and relearning them. I mean, it gets easier and easier each time you're relearning them, but it's kind of annoying at the same time. So, like, have to keep doing that. And if it was up to me, I'd like to play like a 2-hour Suffocation set and just play everything we got. You know, like at least everything that we can physically play. Because there's at least a good 30 songs that we can play. And if we keep playing those and learning old ones, then I would just keep adding them and just making the set longer and longer. But I know the other guys don't really want to play long sets and it is tiring, but for some reason I love doing it. We've only done it once. We played the Key Club in California once, and we did like a 2-hour set. It was pretty cool, but we haven't done it again since then.
Maybe something for the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, maybe that would be cool. But like I said, it's not just one person that decides. It's like the five of us. We all got to decide what we want to do, and. You know, not everybody's always thinking the same way, so we've just got to compromise. But as for old songs, I mean, like, you know, if one of us come up and says, you know, why don't we redo this song again, or, you know, start playing this song out live, then me, Derek, got to get with Terrence and relearn it, and which we do, and we've been doing over the years. But to sit there and try to do, like, 5 or 6 songs very quickly that are new, is a real pain in the ass when you're playing shows and doing other things. So it's like, if they're coming, like, we could probably pull off learning one song. Actually, if we really put our minds to it, we could probably do, like, one song every 2 weeks, relearning. But there's no sense in doing that because we can't fit them all into the set anyway. So it's like we mostly just check out the internet and listen to what people are saying, and if they're saying, yo, they would like to hear this one live, then we think about it, go back to the drawing board with it and relearn it. And most of this stuff, believe it or not, it's fucked up because Terrence can, like, you know, Terrence wrote them, the old stuff, me and Derek didn't. So when somebody's like, yeah, this song, Terrence is like, oh, let me see. And he gets on the guitar, and I swear to God, he can pretty much play the song almost all the way through. Like, his memory goes all the way back, and he can remember the shit like like he just played it yesterday, for the most part. It's pretty crazy. I can't even remember how to play half the shit in Internal Bleeding or Pyrexia. I would really have to sit down and listen to the CDs and go over it again. Mm-hmm. And then it'll come back to me, but, like, it's like the...
You're not good at just going in cold.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, I can hear the song in my head, and I know how it goes. But there's so many little intricate little places and things that you have to do that, like, it's a memory game, you know? And rather than remembering each individual note, it's kind of like we always look at it as shapes. Like, this set of, like, four or five chords makes up a shape in the song, and that's how we remember the songs. It's like in shapes. Weird.
Besides Suffocation, are there any other musical projects are you involved in? I'm not sure if you're involved in the... I guess Pyrexia is playing again. I'm not sure if you're involved in this version.
No, I'm not involved in the Pyrexia. They asked me a while ago if I wanted to do something, but I haven't really kept in contact with them to do anything. And then I was just recently asked by Internal Bleeding to do a solo on their new CD. So I'll probably do that, and then as for other musical things, like I got like home recording stuff that I've done of all kinds of things, different styles and stuff, but nothing serious, you know.
A couple of non-metal projects over there.
Yeah, like I sat home, I was bored, and like in like 2 days, maybe it was 2 days or 3 days, I wrote and recorded like 11 punk songs and just threw them together. They're all like 2 minute, 3 minute songs. But, you know, used DZ Drummer and did the drums and the guitars, but I still need to get a bass player, singer, and another guitar player. But, and the drummer, actually. I pretty much need the whole thing, but the songs are there, and they would be fun to play out live, but they're nothing special, you know what I mean? They're just like cheesy punk songs. I just did them for the hell of it.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much everything I got. Thank you for your time, man. Appreciate it.
All right, cool, man. Send a link when it's all done. I'll check it out. Okay. I'll post it up.
Will do.